This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report, and it is the 18th of June 2011 here in Japan, and today I'm talking to Aaron Franz, the creator of the documentary The Age of Transitions, the host of Transresistor Radio, and the author of Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood, and he can be found at theageoftransitions.com, is that right? Sorry, I don't have that off the top of my head. Okay, yes. Theageoftransitions.com. All right, Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me here, James. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Well, it's the pleasure and honor is all mine. And as listeners may know, I was recently on Transresistor Radio to talk about transhumanism and the transhumanist agenda. And it's great to have you here because this is obviously something that concerns me and many of my listeners, and something that I've been thinking and talking about for years now. So it's great to have someone who's really well studied on this subject. And today I wanted to get into one specific aspect of everything that's happening right now in the rise of the scientific technocracy, and that is the idea of cloud computing and the cloud, as it's often referred to. And it's definitely become more part of the mainstream discourse in recent months. They've been talking about it for years, but it's really starting to take off recently, especially, of course, with his godhood himself, Apple's Steve Jobs' recent announcement of the iCloud. So first, maybe we should just start by getting everyone on the same page and talking about what is the cloud and what are people talking about here?
Well, that's great that you mentioned the actual term, the cloud, because that was something I was going to mention specifically. I've noticed Steve Jobs has said it, but every big service provider out there, all the big companies are calling this cloud computing service, they refer to it as the cloud, as if it's like one single thing. Like, so no matter if you're going with IBM, Google, or Apple, or what have you for your cloud computing services, it's always the cloud. And it kind of it makes you feel as if there it's just this one thing. And it's also, so with each company, it's all sort of, well, it's all the cloud, even though it's separate clouds, but it's also sort of evangelical terminology. Steve Jobs especially was every time he gets up on the podium there promoting his latest gadget or whatever, he's always using these sort of religious and even occult terms to do so. And I remember he said the truth is on the cloud. He said that during his presentation. And again, with the word cloud, cloud is up in the sky. It's a heavenly thing. So it's a religious sort of terminology, I feel like.
And absolutely agreed. I mean, I want to stress that what you're saying is not just some chance concatenation of words or something. I think there really is some aspect of this that I don't know if it's consciously or unconsciously, but is being manipulated in that realm of religious imagery. And the fact that I joke about Steve Jobs being a type of godlike figure, that's, again, that's not really a joke either. I mean, there's been recent studies that have shown that the area of the brain that is affected, that lights up on MRIs when people are having a religious experience, is the same area of the brain that Apple users get when they think about their Apple products. So, I mean, there is something going on here that is speaking to some realm of our conscious or subconscious on an almost religious ecstatic level.
Yeah, well, that's good marketing, as they call it. Good PR. That's only one level of it too. It's like, if you can get people to adore the product and actually worship it in a way, and then, I mean, what better can you do? That is really literally what's happening. And also with Steve Jobs' presentation on the iCloud, I was noticing he was always saying that you don't have to think about it. So one of the big selling points of the cloud computing is that it's sort of an automatic thing, and you don't have to worry about thinking at all. You just kind of do stuff, and all of your Apple products will finally work properly because they're so annoying to sync up as things are now. And that's actually true. It is quite annoying to actually get them to work the way that you want them to. Well, now you don't even have to think about getting them to work. It's just all automatic with the cloud, basically. Well, that's the idea, at least.
Right, exactly. So So my understanding of this whole concept is basically that instead of being able to store our files on our own personal hard drives and working with them and syncing them in various ways, instead it's all going to be on the cloud. It's going to be an internet-based service that we'll be able to basically just download our documents when and as we need them. And the advantages to this, I mean, there are advantages, right? I mean, they couldn't sell it if there weren't any. And it certainly is easier to do, as you say. It's sort of automatic. You don't have to think about it. And also, we don't have to worry about upgrading software or that type of thing, because eventually, I mean, all of our software platforms and everything will be taken care of by the cloud. All we'll need really is internet access, and it'll be sort of a plug and play, don't think about it kind of process to handle everything that we have digitally. So what could be wrong with that? That sounds great.
Yeah, exactly. And software as a service is one of the other terms that they use for this too. But yeah, again, it's sort of the amalgamation of the internet and personal computing. And this has been an ongoing process for some years. I mean, so many services online are about uploading your content, and then you sort of work with their content management systems, like even YouTube and all this is like that. So for content producers, There are people already concerned with issues over ownership of content, because when you load your content that you produce, or just whatever you even have on your computer, it's not even really a production, it's just information. When you load it all onto the cloud, then it's not yours anymore. It's all there, and it's obviously, we can see this is about, well, when it comes to databasing people's personal information, and this makes things that much easier and more complete, really, because everything's all in one source now. So that is, of course, is an issue.
Of course, it's always the main issue, isn't it? I mean, when they refer to the cloud as a singular entity, maybe that's because really the back door, I mean, the NSA is going to have its, you know, all-seeing eye penetrating into every nook and cranny of the internet as we know. So really, I mean, we're storing all of our personal details in this system that can and will and has been shown to be vulnerable to all sorts of security violations, not only by the criminals and hackers, but also by the government itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And the security risks of this system and any other internet or computer services, all those security risks that exist are actually potential excuses to centralize these services even more under government authority or regulation. Because, you know, if some horrible thing were to happen, again, this gets into cybersecurity like we were talking about last time. It's the same thing. So all these potential security risks, privacy risks, could be the actual excuse used to centralize this thing even more and create one, whether it be through Cyber Command or whatever, you know what I mean? Just one centralized authority to ensure people's safety, not so much their privacy, but their safety from whatever digital terrorists or whatever may be lurking out there to get them.
Right, and on that note, I mean, obviously we've seen the creation in recent months, and especially in recent weeks, of this, cyber boogie threat of, you know, Anonymous and Lulzsec and all of these things that are defacing all these mainstream websites and things. So we're starting to see the build-up to what will inevitably be the inevitable response, which is the cybersecurity-type legislation that they already have in the wings, and we know they're just waiting for an excuse to implement. So there's definitely a ratcheting up going on in recent weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I've noticed that myself with all these stories, and you have to wonder, and we have to remember with the false flag terrorism, understanding the reality of that. I mean, this could be false flag digital terrorism, and it seems as though they are preparing us now psychologically for that to happen at some point. They want us to believe it's an inevitability, and here we are, you and I, James, speaking as though it is an inevitability. You know what I mean? So in a way, like, we're I don't want to say we're playing into it, but we're definitely forecasting that. But the way to get through this, I guess, is just to know that false flag terrorism is a tool. It has been used in the past. It will be used in the future. It will always be used. And the way to defuse it, I guess, is to constantly call it out and be able to call it out when it happens. And that can be a real challenge, but we have to do that.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly the point. I liken it to a magician's trick, and magician's tricks are always, of course, incredible and amazing when you're watching them. But if someone gets up on stage before the trick happens and explains to you exactly how they're going to do this and that it's all an illusion, and just, you know, watch his left hand when he's doing this thing with his right hand, and if you know the trick in advance, then it's really not so amazing, and you just think, oh, well, I see the trick. So that to me is the point. We have to show that it is a trick, and whether it's a staged event or a provocateur event or something that they allow to happen, we already know they have this legislation just waiting to come along at the, you know, as the solution to the problem that they've helped to foment into existence. And once people realize that, I mean, the trick's out of the bag, and they really can't use it anymore.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and so we got to keep at it, showing the truth here, and also that just the way things are going are towards centralization, as we can see. The personal computer isn't so personal anymore.
If it ever was, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Well, so let's get into that issue. I mean, what the cloud really represents, the idea of centralization of all this information and everything. And ultimately, isn't that really one of the main aims of the transhumanist agenda, to start this kind of collective Borg-type entity that eventually we're all going to merge with?
Well, yeah, that's an excellent point. One of their big ideas is this hive mind global consciousness thing, where through some digital means, computers, virtual reality, whatever, our minds will be hooked up together somehow, so that we can actually directly communicate through some technological medium. And more than that, we can, once we're connected to that, we can blend our personality with the greater hive mind, that whatever that would be, you know what I mean? So you become this super entity, and the idea, the potential benefit is that we would be able to solve problems that no individual could, and we would grow and become this amazingly intelligent thing. And I can see how this fits into the whole hive mind idea.
You know, it strikes me that one of the ways that transhumanism really propagates and thrives is that just so many of the ideas sound so ridiculous that if you're telling people about them, they'll just dismiss it. Oh, that's ridiculous. I can't believe that. But when...
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. It's true. They do sound pretty out there. But at the same time, they also say some practical things, too. And they call for things such as surveillance. They say that these things are good. And the idea of surveillance is basically everybody's tracked because of the digital age we live in. Digital records of our entire lives, basically, are in existence. The idea is to use those to make everybody be able to surveil everyone else at all times. And this is supposedly a good thing, because people will be monitoring each other and will be safe, and will actually, the idea is also that we'll be able to monitor government and see what they're doing, and everything will be transparent and open, and it's a wonderful thing. So they do call for these things too.
Yeah, because I'm sure that, you know, the people in positions of power will have the exact same type of tracking on them, and it'll work in the same way, right?
That's the idea.
Right. Well, yeah, so again, it's more of the incredible things that sound incredible and would work in some fairy tale reality where this technology is administered by angels descended from heaven to make everyone equal, but we know that that's not the way that this world works, and it's not the way that, that the system has been set up, and it's not the way any technology in history has ever been implemented, so I don't know why this technology is going to be different.
Yeah, it's always about the practical application, because... with the sales points, as we're saying, they're totally off the wall and really science fictional, and it gets you involved, as you were saying. It gets the listener involved, like, oh wow, that's exciting, that's fun, it sounds like a movie, like, so it commands attention. And even with the idea of the singularity, I feel this is the same way with that, like, oh, artificial intelligence machines are going to become super intelligent, and they're going to become alive, and they're going to take over and build all these new inventions. Everything's going to be amazing. I feel that's kind of a distraction from all the narrow AI systems that are in place now. They're at work now. They're going through the huge databases that have been created. And I mean, that's the real issue. It's all this sort of like mundane stuff, all the things that nobody really even wants to talk about because they're uncomfortable to talk about, and that the invasion of privacy and all this. But also, it's just kind of boring to talk about it too. It's not as fun as like a massively intelligent artificial AGI system and the hive mind and all this crazy stuff like that. That's a lot of fun to talk about.
Right, yeah, it's the big ideas that draw people in, and that's how they get involved and interested in this, and they start to invest their identity in it so that they'll protect it when it gets challenged. But as you say, I mean, it's the things that people don't want to think about that's much more important to this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Absolutely. Well, you bring up a good point, because I don't know whether it's consciously this way or unconsciously, but I have already seen people already implementing the types of arguments that you talk about regarding privacy in such issues as recently when it came out with the iPhone tracking, the database, the unsecured database that's tracking everyone's movements. And I was reading comments about that on places like theregister.co.uk, and there were people on there giving arguments like, well, this will be great because it'll be able to help people who've been wrongly accused of a crime. They can show from their iPhone records that they weren't in a certain place at a certain time, which not only is stupid from a legal point of view, because just because your iPhone wasn't somewhere doesn't mean you were somewhere, but also, I mean, the idea that people would put that forward as an argument, well, it's great if we're just tracked and surveilled all the time, we can just prove that we're innocent of things we've been accused of or whatever, as if that's the point of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And these excuses have come up with every new privacy invading technology that's popped up. It's always the if you have nothing to hide, then what's wrong with you, just go along with it, this is great. And I really see this in terms of cloud computing too. Cloud computing and the centralization of all digital records, and just the hookup into whatever this Borg creation is, whatever it ends up being. By not doing that, it could be perceived as odd and antisocial. Even like if cloud computing becomes the standard. You know what I mean? It's somebody having their own personal computer, like, well, why would you even want that to begin with? You know what I mean? Like, the cloud is so much better, and it does all these things, and you'd have to be ridiculous not to even want to be on it. And more than that, you must be scheming, and you must be plotting against the powers that be. And why would you do that? And you're in danger. So, it's. The whole psychological compliance on a mass social scale to these sorts of things, it is very troubling, and we have to be aware that could happen, that is happening slowly, and we have to be like, hey, look, you know, privacy is important. Let's ensure that it remains so, and that people who are concerned with privacy aren't made out to be dangerous.
Right, but as you point out, it's already being constructed, the social construct of the idea of, you know, the dangers of privacy and things like that, and you're exactly right, that's exactly how it will be implemented, combined with the fact that the manufacturers will eventually stop manufacturing personal hard drives for computers. I mean, they will just be cloud devices, and once
you'd have to go out of your way
So, I mean, eventually it's going to be, it's not going to be an easy choice to make to want to actually preserve the idea of having a personal, you know, computer device or something. So it is going to be something that I think, I imagine, within several years, we'll start to really see that in the store shelves And there will be debate about it, but I think ultimately, as you say, we're heading in that direction of the social compliance. So so it does present the conundrum of what we do on the other side of that debate to stop things, or maybe not stop, but derail that direction of that that locomotive of social compliance.
Yeah, that's the real challenge. What are we going to do, and how are we going to choose to do computing, and can we make our own networks and things like this? And how are we going to, basically, plain and simple, it's how are we going to stick up for ourselves in the midst of all this? What are we going to do? Because even government documents have foreseen this as well. There's the UK MOD StratTrans 2006 report. They said that anybody who's not hooked up to whatever the system, I forget what they refer to the system, but anybody who's not linked in will be considered suspicious. I mean, they say that specifically, and they're foreseeing that for about the time frame we're talking about here. As you said, the next few years, it seems like this is going to be rolled out. They're already starting with the cloud computing services now, and where that will go from there. I mean, it seems like all the reports have called it right, and what do we do? Yeah.
Well, I assume we'll probably not come to the bottom of that in this conversation, but let's take a look at some specific examples of how this cloud concept can play out. And I think we've seen already a sort of mass media psyop recently, and it revolved around the Julian Assange manhunt that was going on. And regardless of what you think about Assange and whether he's opposition or controlled opposition or being used or whatever you think of him, I mean, what we saw was a person being sort of digitally hunted down and cut off from the world, with the hosting on Amazon being cut off and his PayPal accounts being cut off, so he couldn't receive any donations and things like that. So what we witnessed really on this mass scale, as the entire world was watching, was this man being digitally cut off from the world. And I think, you know, that at this point is not the end of a person's life, but I mean, stretching this down the road a few years, once and more of our life really is in the cloud, I mean, what an incredible power to have, to be able to turn off someone's access to this at any time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the real issue. When you're literally living within a computer generated world, I mean, all your money's there, all your records of everything you do are there, your entire life is in a computer, anything of value, then whoever controls the system controls your life. And that's, I mean, to me, I've always understood that this is the danger of transhumanism, but of just the entire digital world that we're building up now. I mean, that's how it is. It's giving power over to whoever's programming this massive computer, this system. Whoever's building it and whoever's overseeing it has the power. And then the idea that it will be open source is sort of the excuse to say, well, you know, it'll be okay because everything's going to be open source. I mean, well, will it really be that way? I mean, again, with the whole security issue, are security threats going to pop up that aren't going to allow real open source to exist? Like, it's sort of the same problem with the supposed free market system in America. Like, well, is it really a free market? I mean, not really. And I feel like this, the same thing applies to technology and computers.
A very salient point. Absolutely. Absolutely right. So again, they're creating the false choices and the false system that we think that we're getting the choice, and we think, oh, this is an open source thing and I'm going to choose to go in the cloud, but really we're being manipulated in that direction. And yeah, absolutely. It's really a phony Orwellian idea of, the system they're presenting towards us and what's actually being presented. And I think more so than the security talking point, which is one that they like to focus on, because it's always the answer to that is always, as you say, even more centralization of power. But even more than that, it's always, in my mind, it's, well, the government can come along and declare someone to be a cyber terrorist or whatever they want to say, and thereby use that as an excuse to turn people's access off or to go into their records or whatever they want to do. So to me, it's always the people in power who are, you know, writing the laws, and it's the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. So it's, again, a question of who's really owning and running this system.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the individual person who's trying to stick up and, like, actually do something right is threatened by all this stuff because, as you're saying, they can be targeted all the easier. And is that really something that we want to empower? And are we all, every single person, are we all going to be diligent enough to not allow that to happen and call things out as we see them when they happen? Are we going to say, hey, look, you're trying to persecute an innocent person. I personally, as another innocent person, am not going to allow that to happen. So I feel as all of these realities grow, all technology grows in power, and all this continues, the real issue is, what are we going to do in the face of whatever it is that happens? And are we going to have the fortitude, the strength to actually stand up and do the right thing? Because the right thing isn't really that complicated. I mean, we all can tell what the right thing to do is in any given situation. For the most part, it's not overly complex. The real issue is, are we going to be able to stand up and say, hey, you know what? Or, no, this is, I'm not going to allow this to happen.
That's right, in a sense. But I think one of the ways that we can be manipulated into going in the wrong direction is to be given not just one or two or three mega big choices to make between the, you know, the good and the evil, but to be given thousands and thousands and thousands of much, much smaller everyday types of choices. And we just go along to get along and go along to get along. And ultimately we end up in the wrong side, and we know it's wrong, but we're already there. And so I think of the idea of incrementalism. I mean, we're not going to be presented with all of this all at once. It's going to be a little series of choices with, like, oh, well, you know, I mean, I don't really like Apple and what they're doing and their security, but the iPhone, you know, it's really handy and it helps me out, so I'll get that. And then oh, well, the new iPhone, it's going to be all cloud-based, so I guess I'll get that. And eventually we end up at the spot where we didn't want to be. But so that raises the question of, is there a line in the sand? Do you have a line in the sand? Do you think there should be that type of moment where we all say no and reject the technology?
Yeah, well, that's a wonderful insight as well, because this is all incremental, and we don't see it, and we don't even understand now the whole privacy issue of all the stuff that we already have with cell phones and how they're basically tracking us everywhere we go. I mean, they have the ability to do so, and we're not really thinking twice about it. And to actually, I feel that if you consciously become aware of that and you really sit down and you think about it and you decide, if you really come to terms with understanding the invasion of privacy and technology and what we're at, where we're actually at now, it forces you to make some decisions and make some sacrifices and be like, you know what, okay, I'll have a cell phone, but maybe I'm not going to cart it around with me everywhere. Maybe I'm just going to, you know, leave it, and I'm not going to take it on every single trip I go on. You know, just a simple little choice like that is a good choice to make. And it's not difficult, but for some people, I know it would seem to be difficult, but it really isn't. And doing just really, there's so many creative ways to sort of disrupt the sort of nefarious side of technology. So just like going out of your way to, I don't know, confuse predictive systems of certain sorts. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of like weird little creative things that can be done. And I'm not even throwing out any specific instances. I'm just maybe encouraging people to, you know, just be creative and just do little things. You know what I mean? Just nothing even that seems like it's of consequence, but just make sacrifices and just be a glitch in the system when you can. You know what I mean?
Right. I think I know. So you mean things like, you know, putting up the wrong information on these CIA fronted Facebook type things or whatever to, you know?
Yeah. Just right. Putting in weird search terms or something that you wouldn't search for, like, you know, if search for some sort of weird gingerbread cookies, like how to break gingerbread cookies, and you never baked in your life or something. You know what I mean? Just one day go on a search and look up gingerbread cookie books. I don't know.
Yeah, why not? Why not? Absolutely. Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, we are the source of the information that they're going to use to try to, you know, construct their databases and their control grids and their predictive, you know, ideas of how to, you know, control society. So if we are a little bit mischievous, then we can throw them off the track, perhaps.
Yeah, should probably be stressed here. Just do little things and don't do anything that's actually threatening or dangerous or anything like that. Like we're not trying to create any digital terrorists or anything here. You
exactly,
know what I mean?
Right.
So let's put that caveat out
no,
there.
No, I agree. And I think that should be stressed because I think, as I've said before, I think things like, you know, defacing websites or whatever is just stupid and pointless. It makes no political point whatsoever. And ultimately, what's it going to do other than to invite the type of crackdown that we don't want, that we explicitly don't want?
Yeah, you don't want to be destructive or dangerous or saying anything out. You don't want to be destructive ever. And just doing the right thing goes against the system if the system is wrong. You know what I mean? So if you're doing something good, then then that's actually or if you're just doing something mundane, that can do so much. You know what I mean? You don't have to be all antagonistic and violent and all this. That's the last thing you should ever want to do. No sort of violent or real revolutionary uprising is going to solve anything, because actually the fomentation of revolution and violence, I feel, is a big thing right now, and it's happening to as an excuse again for the centralization of power and to keep everybody safe from all those crazy extremists. So don't be an extremist. Be the exact opposite of an extremist. Be completely rational, logical, and just a good honest person. That's actually a danger to an unhonest system.
Agreed. And sticking together with the fellow people in our community and building community, I think, is also effective, because that's clearly what the system seems more and more designed to try to break down and to get us away from our natural humanity and our human roots as people who live together and work in communities and to be more, you know, slaves to machines. Well, on the idea of revolution and the idea that revolution doesn't really resolve anything, your book, of course, is called Revolve, and it's Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood. So I assume this is an issue that you've given some thought to about revolutions and how they actually play out versus the way that we're supposedly the image of revolutions that we're given.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's in the title of the book, Revolve, and absolutely, I get into revolutionary movements, how, well, historically, they never really work out the way that the revolutionaries hoped that they would, or at least say that they would. So, yeah, revolution, again, is just spinning around in a circle. So if you're revolving, you're kind of just spinning around in a circle. You end up in the same place that you were in the beginning. So maybe that's not the best way to go about things. And again, with revolutions, they are typically violent. They incite violence and anger, and they really are fueled off of some of the worst aspects of just human existence. It gets you all riled up and worked up. And to serve what purpose? Whose purpose are you serving? I mean, as a revolutionary, you'll find that most revolutionaries, they just kind of spout out the phrases of their leaders. So you get the one revolutionary leader, and then by getting a whole bunch of followers that just repeat whatever that leader says, you've effectively, you've got a little army of robots, robotic drones then. And so the real goal that I'm going for, and I hope many other people are going for, is individual thought and individual action, and empowering single people to do creative and unusual things. And again, this is getting back to the solutions I was talking about earlier. It's the real solution is not to join any revolution. It's to be creative and be yourself and have the right to be that, have the right to be yourself and an individual. And that's actually the individual life is now threatened in part due to technology. But I mean, beyond that, it's just it's not just technology. It's kind of us wanting to be parts of revolutions and greater movements because we're kind of drawn to that. So it's a thing that we have to, again, be consciously aware of, like, what am I really taking part in? We have to always ask ourselves that question.
And yet, if I may be devil's advocate, I mean, a lot of the technology we've been given so far has been immensely, incredibly empowering for the individual. I mean, even such things as YouTube or whatever has opened up a realm of people being able to communicate worldwide instantaneously to potentially millions of people with nothing more than a, you know, webcam or a handycam or something. And it's quite a revolutionary concept, to use that word.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's not all a bad thing either. Of course not. And we have to, the good things that we do have, we have to prop them up and hold on to them. And we have to realize what we have and use things such as YouTube as good communication tools to bring out the... Oh, my goodness. Okay. So we just have to know what we have. And, I lost my train of thought, sorry.
No problem at all. So, I agree absolutely that we have to use this empoweringly when we can and as we can to try to maintain our individuality rather than to succumb to the group collective. And, and I think that's obviously a delicate balance. And it's one that we need more of a discussion going on, really. I mean, I'm not here pretending I have the answers to this, but I know that it's not being discussed in anything near the extent that it needs to be, as we really do approach a type of technological abyss. I mean, whatever you think of the singularity as a concept, I mean, there's no doubt that we are in this accelerating technological progress, and I think the real incredible decisions that we're going to have to make, not just as individuals but as humanity, are going to be here a lot quicker than a lot of people realize. So I don't know how to promote more of a debate on this and to get more people thinking about these issues, but I think that must be an important part of the solution as well.
Well, that's right. Yeah, and there isn't a real debate going on. It's and when you try to criticize certain things, you bring up privacy issues, you get marginalized so often, and people just write you off, and nobody really wants to talk about this in a real constructive manner. Everybody wants to be antagonistic towards each other as well. Everybody wants to get in a fight over who's wrong and who's right, when it would be more constructive for us to be like, okay, you know, we're all in the same situation here, so let's honestly look at what's happening. Let's forget about all the public relations and all the touchy-feely news stories we've heard about all this stuff, and let's call out the real dangers as we see them, and let's work them out. Let's work out the problems that arise and actually get a real discussion going and not sit here fighting and quarreling over silly things and getting into fights just to do that. And I feel like so many people are using YouTube especially. I feel like it's a giant forum for to argue with each other about stuff, and it's like one polar opposite against the other, and neither opposite is really correct, or you could view it as both of them are equally correct. You know, the whole, for as an example, the theist versus atheist debate, like, well, who's really right there? Like, either side could argue their point, but in the end, what is the point of the argument itself? Like, what's it doing to us? And like, what are we gaining from this? Are we gaining an understanding? And a good argument will get people to gain understanding. So it's about getting good discussions going and pressing the real issues and making sure that the real issues do not get swept under the table ever.
Very, very good points. And that spurs a lot of ideas in my mind. I mean, One thing that occurs to me is that atheism is just a subsection, a variant of theism, and it's just that form of theism which posits no god as a god instead of this specific god or whatever. Anyway,
oh my goodness,
that's
yeah.
a completely different topic, I guess. But
sure it is. Oh man.
well, getting back to the cloud, then it seems to me that an obvious and very simple idea for going against that agenda and that sort of overwhelming progress towards that idea would be simply to take it upon ourselves to store as much information as we can locally, especially as we're heading towards a world that theoretically could be completely centralized and completely censorable by a flip of a switch by whatever agency, you know, grants itself the power to do that. Well, it becomes more and more important to be saving these types of this information that who knows when and we'll have it and in what form and for how long. So that brings up the question of how do people go about doing that? To what extent do you do that already with things that you find online? And what, you know, how can people take this into their own hands?
Yeah, that's a wonderful suggestion. Yeah, I would also encourage people to save whatever they think is of value that's on the internet now, because it may not always be there. If you come across some PDFs, whatever they may be, a government report, maybe it's an old book that's online, save the PDFs. If there's a website that you like, go and save the website and make a record of it and put it on your own hard drive and save it and share it with other people too, because I mean, if it's on your hard drive, that's one thing, but if you give it to other people, then you know it spreads out and there's more copies of it out there. If one copy potentially gets destroyed or whatever, then you know it's still out there. And yeah, the internet as it is really an amazing thing now, with the freedom of expression and the freedom to post wherever you want on there. And it's really made it the ability to freely post things has made it the great thing that it is now. And let's really take advantage of it by saving everything that we can, everything of value. So just go out there, save it, and share it with your friends. And we'll always have that information, and hopefully in the future we'll find more ways to share it with other people.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that's very important. And oddly enough, I think another one of the things that we're fighting is just the technocracy knows that as human beings, we can be habituated into certain patterns of activity. And if they can just habituate the patterns that they want, that's beneficial to their agenda, then they win, basically, because we start to, you know, enslave ourselves by going along with their habituation. And an aspect of that is that when I first started the Corbett Report and was first researching, I would always save whatever news stories or whatever I found interesting to my hard drive. And I have this very, you know, huge and growing archive of these news stories that I've been saving for years now. But there came a point after a couple of years that I started simply just linking to these things instead of downloading them. And it just became part of my routine to do that instead. And once that happens, then yes, of course, like all of these documents are linked up on Corbett Report. But if I don't have them locally, then if the Corbett Report goes down, all of these things get potentially lost to the ether. So even myself, I mean, I have to struggle with this, and I have to remind myself, no, I have to save these articles. So it's something that is not easy to do. I mean, we have to really start to habituate these types of things into our daily life. But once we do that, I think, you know, if we can make these types of individual choices and liberty and things like that part of our daily routine, then we will win ultimately in the end. So it's a question of who can habituate the public the best, I suppose, which is a horrible way of looking at it, but maybe that's what we're dealing with.
Well, yeah, and again, you're bringing up the point of breaking bad habits on your own. That's really what it's all about, because if you notice that, like, oh, you know, like I'm not saving these news reports anymore. You, by making a conscious decision, be like, oh, you know, I'm gonna go out of my way to make sure that I do save this, then you're doing something. And really, that's the solution right there. And it applies to so many different things. It's just the conscious decision, be like, oh, you know what, I usually do this one thing and it's a habit, and beyond that it's an actual socially engineered habit that is not really in my favor at the end of the day. Maybe to combat that, what I'm going to have to do is just change things just a little bit. You know, I'm going to do things a little bit different, and I'm going to have to remember to do that. But in the act of remembering, you're doing something incredibly useful. You're actually just that little thing is so big, and this really encourages me and makes me feel good because it's not really that much that we even have to do. it's just the little things that they add up, and I feel that's an empowering message to the average person that you don't have to do too much. You just have to like make little choices here and there, and they actually add up far more than you might even imagine.
All right. Well, I mean, there's so much that we can talk about in so many different directions, but I think that's a pretty nice positive note to leave things on for this conversation anyway. So that's, I mean, it's so much to think about, but I hope people at least are starting to think more about these issues and take them seriously. Certainly, I mean, nothing that I talk about on the Corbett Report is a game or is meant for entertainment, but I think this issue especially must be important to people who are tuned into the Corbett Report and are accessing my work online, because obviously, I mean, in the type of cloud world that we're being engineered into, who knows what ways that the governments of the future will be able to censor sites like this one at will. So this is something that I think will strike home with the listeners, or should, if it hasn't already. So again, there's a lot to think about, and I will be coming back to this issue many times, I'm sure, in the future. And I really hope people will be checking out your work as well. The Age of Transitions, your documentary, your book, your radio show. Tell people about the work that you're doing and how best they can access it.
Yes, it's theageoftransitions.com. All of the important stuff is on there. I have the Trans Resistor Radio podcast. I have interviews. You can download the audio there. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can watch my YouTube videos I've made. You can watch the Age of Transitions documentary. That's on theageoftransitions.com. And you can get the book Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood. You can get that there too. If you buy a paperback version of Revolve, you receive a free DVD copy of The Age of Transitions as a free gift. So that's a way to get both of them. And I really hope people will read the book and watch the documentary and share the documentary with other people. Again, when you get the DVD, burn it and give it to other people. That's, I highly encourage that. And theageoftransitions.com. I hope you'll check it out.
Excellent. Well, I certainly hope people will check it out. And I certainly hope that we can have you on again in the future to talk about some of these issues, because as I say, there's a lot to talk about. So Aaron France, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, James. I appreciate it.